Hello and welcome to an all new episode of my podcast, The Lisa Ann Experience. I am your host, Lisa Ann, and I would like to extend my gratitude to you for making me a part of your listening experience. I know there's a ton of podcasts out there, and if you want to catch up, if you're a new listener, you can subscribe. If you rate and review, it helps a lot. You can also subscribe to my YouTube channel, The Real Lisa Ann, which is where everything sits. I've got my travel vlogs, my sports vlogs, all kinds of stuff there. But most important, I do a live premiere every Friday night at 8 p.m. It is this very episode that you're listening to right now, but you get to watch the video component. A great way to really be a part of the community with me in the chat. We kind of catch up on our week and all the things that are going on. A lot of my community have already listened, so it's really like our time. It's a ton of fun. And also, it's a great place for you to be able to have access, whether you want to just listen or watch. So that's my YouTube. All of my social media is the same. The Real Lisa Ann. So you can follow me on all platforms. I don't direct message. If you're getting messages, it's a scammer. It's not from me. Here we are getting ready to complete the 2-month grounding period of me not flying, not traveling, not leaving the island to do anything. And it has been fabulous. I've gotten caught up on so many things that I really just needed to do, whether it be local things, whether it be things at home, nesting, taking care of my apartment, going through. And like, I've had this ongoing list in my phone of things that I really, really want to do, but they take a little bit of time to lean into. Sometimes I'll take an hour or two class that will then give me what I need to go and do the thing. So I've just been going through this incredible to-do list. And I've loved being home. I'm excited that my very first trip is going to be a social trip to go skiing with my best friend. But it's just been great. And as I've been home, I've been able to really deliberately, which is the word I'm using because it was what I put in my New Year's resolution, to be more deliberate with my time, to schedule my gigs with purpose, and to be sure that there's time in between where I don't lose 30 to 45 days unpacking and packing like I did last year, to really think about what trips I want to take or what trips might be better for next year. But it's been great. It's amazing how nice it feels to just be really, really connected with home. And I think we get so busy, and next thing you know, we forget that we have this great community where we live. I've been taking classes at my building. I've been spending more time with my neighbors. I've been doing local events, and it's just been awesome. So one of the things I wanted to do in January before this time was over was I wanted to go on a date with my city. And I think anyone that's listening right now or watching on YouTube that was a fan of Sex and the City, that was something Sarah Jessica Parker would do. She'd say, oh, you're never alone in New York City, which is true. And it's one of the very few places I've been in all of my travels all over the world where it's very normal to eat alone. It's very normal to go and do things alone. You're never really alone, but like, it's one of those, it's an easy place to be alone. Whereas I felt like in LA, if you sat somewhere and ate alone, someone was going to sit with you and it was not going to be an alone experience. Whereas New York, a lot of people that eat alone or that are in between meetings, you'll see them eating at the bar at their favorite spots. And it's just like a single thing, right? So the date with my city started out with a hair appointment. So I've been pulling through my natural color. So I don't use highlights. Anyone who's watching, you'll see it. Anyone who's listening, just visualize this. I don't highlight my hair, but I do have a lot of gray. So I have to get my roots touched up every 2.5-3 weeks. It sounds like a task, but it's just the roots. And I don't pull it through because it keeps your hair healthier not to do that. But over the summer, my hair gets some nice sun. I had some highlights. And so me and Donnie, my hair guru, wanted to kind of balance the color back out without shocking my hair and doing it very gradually because you know the light is going to come through. So we did the first run 3 weeks ago and then we finished the layering on Saturday. And so I was like, I'm going to have fresh hair. I have a Bloomingdale's gift certificate that I've had since my birthday last year from my friend Johnny V, who I've had here on my podcast. So sweet of him. And I've never visited the Bloomingdale's in New York City because it's one of those things I did in LA. I would go here, I'd order online. The Bloomingdale's I went to here, I went to the big one on 3rd. It's a mall / museum. It's a really nice store. It's hours to walk around. And I'm envisioning an outfit that I'm trying to put together for an event that I'm hosting at a college where I'm speaking, and I'm always like really particular about those things. If I'm going to be sitting on a stage, I prefer to have pants. I don't want to be above in a skirt and be fidgeting. It's got to be pants. So that I have all these things. I'd like it to be sleeveless because normally when you're on stage speaking, there's a ton of lights on you. And if you have sleeves on, you are sweating profusely, which sometimes shows. So like all of these things. So I'm planning on this and looking at a couple of things. And again, the mojo is this gift certificate's got me in here, this gift card. I'm going to use it. I haven't used it. I don't want to lose it or forget about it. And I have never in my life sat on a gift card ever. Normally I just go blow it on the internet. I'd be like, okay, let me go Bloomies online. Let me find something. I did. I found a top for $48 that I love. And if you know that in New York, there's no sales tax on clothing when you purchase less than $100. So no sales tax. I'm still sitting on $2. That's the only thing I bought after walking the store for like 4 hours. But it's one of those things where it's such a big store. You want to scope everything out. And I'm still really getting ideas. And so I'm taking pictures of things and putting kind of a lookbook together of what I want for this speaking engagement and then some meetings that I have following it. And these are things that like I'm going to wear again, sort of buy a good suit or something that I could wear to speak at other things. So I'm looking. And then I'm like, okay, I'm good. I have my ideas. I'm not in a rush to buy something right now. I know the date that I need it by because it's pants. It's going to be altered, obviously. And so after that, I decided, you know what? It's still really nice out. We've had weird, nice weather, like warm, like it feels more like spring than winter. And it's raining or it's not, just humid. It's very strange. But so I'm like, I'll walk. And I was going to go to a little restaurant by my place that I eat at alone once a month. Now, I can't tell you where it is because then you might go there. But when I go in, I know the bartender's schedule that I'm cool with. There's two men there. They've been there forever. Super nice. And I'll sit at the bar by myself. And when I sit down, I don't take a menu because I go in there once a month and I order the exact same thing. There's no changes. And so this has been going on between me and this bartender once a month, 12 times a year for, you know, 3-4 years. So I go to my spot and I walk in, and ironically, there was one seat where the check was just paid. My bartender looked at me. He was like, got it, cleaning it up. And the seat was in between a group of four women on the right side of me in their own group and two women on this side of me. And the two women on this side of me, I said, this is wild. Like there's this ladies' night out, like this whole bar is just women sitting here. And so we started chatting just a little bit with people on the right, but they were in their own little world. The two over here from Long Island were in the city for the day. One was in her late 50s, one was in her mid 60s. We ended up engaging in some really lovely conversation. And that's not something I normally want to do. Normally I'm there because I want to like be in my zone, but I had such a nice day out in the city that I was like, is it going to kill you to be social with some strangers right now? It's not. Just make it happen. So I learn a lot. I learned that one of the women just went through cancer. And so 18 months of her life going through treatments. Now she's healthy and she was beautiful and just lovely, lovely, lovely woman. And to know that she went through that, and this was one of her first trips back into the city with her girlfriend, and then her girlfriend that I was talking to, she's, you know, 57, she's married, no kids. So I get to know them pretty well. And next thing you know, two more women come in. Beautiful lesbian couple from Washington. And they sat down, we greeted them, and they looked at us. They said, look, we have been in New York for 3 days, and we cannot believe how friendly everybody is here. Everybody talks to us everywhere we go. We did not expect this. And so now it's a group, right? Now we're all just all talking. We're learning about each other. And I'm like, okay, there was an episode of Pat McAfee that I had saved. Did not go and watch it on YouTube because I had planned to watch it while I was eating my dinner. And even the bartender was looking shocked at me because he knows that I have a stand for my phone. I prop it up. I don't engage. I'm watching. I'm just relaxing. I like to just sit in there one night a month. So we're talking, having a great time. And they're lovely. And so one of the women says to me, you know, like, you live by here, you know, how high up is your apartment? I showed some pictures, you know, can we see it before we go home? And I'm like, okay, you want to walk over? Fine, no big deal. Like, whatever. Well, this is like so random now that I've not only had conversations at my restaurant where I speak to no one, but now we're walking blocks back to my place to do a little walkthrough before they head out. So they come up and one of the women couldn't go out on my patio because she was like, wow, I'm testing myself. I'm not really afraid of heights. But when you open the patio door, I realized how uncomfortable I was with that. And I said, I've had a couple of friends come through. So long and the short of it, we're here maybe 10 minutes and they're looking around in my office. There's a framed photo of my book, The Life Back. And it was sent to me as a gift from Scribe, as a congratulations for self-publishing a second book. And they both see it. Oh my God, you've written a book. Oh my God, do you have any here? Do you have a copy? Yes, no problem at all. I'll give you each a copy of my book. No problem. Okay, great. We're heading out. No big deal. Flash forward to about an hour. I just got out of the shower. I'm in bed. And I get a text because, of course, we exchanged numbers because this is what you do now, right? They were older. I realized like I couldn't ask them for like their Insta to like DM there. I get a photo of the back of my book with a text that says, hey, porno star, what the fuck? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Why? Question mark, question mark, question mark. You're way too good for that shit. That's it. I write back. Those are the choices that I had. This is what I did. I have no regrets. This is a life that I chose. Please don't judge me. Have not heard back since. And I was like, I should just block this person's number and write this whole experience up. But now I'm curious if this person is going to go back into their phone. But now I've realized it's been 3 days, which means this person is disgusted by my existence. Just appalled that they went out and had a conversation with a porn star. And what I envision was that when they got home with these books and their husbands got into the picture, their husbands were like, you two are never going into the city again. See, this is what happens. People are absolutely crazy. You met a... The long and the short of it all is, this is why I don't engage. Because it's one or the other in many cases. It's either the super fan who wants way too much of my personal space, or the person that gets to know me as a human, but then finds out a career choice that I made that has no fucking impact on their life at all. I'm not asking them to watch it. I'm not asking them to do it. But to even send the judgy Judgerson text, like disgusted by me. And so I can't wait to tell this bartender the story when I go back next month. And so I sat and thought about that in bed. And it brought me to really thinking about some heavy news that we got this week during AVN, just devastating, the loss of Jessie Jane. Jessie Jane was in the business since, I want to say, 2005, 2003, 2005. She was with Digital Playground. I knew Jessie her entire career. I did a ton of events with Jessie. I was on set a couple of times with Jessie. We did Teachers, which was like a Mean Girls spinoff thing with the book and everything. We also did a flight attendant movie. So I've been on set with her. I've been at events with her. And so getting this news and then having this experience and how they tie together. When someone passes away in the industry, there's a list of our closest friends that we all connect with each other immediately. Hey, how are you? Did you see the news? You know, because you know the impact is different on everyone. And so it starts a group conversation. And it's always, for me, my top five. I go through my top five. Then I see on social media who I think might be struggling. I reach out. You know, this is a huge loss. A huge loss. Huge loss for her family, her son, her friends. Her boyfriend was with her as well, so his family, his friends. But there were things about how this came out that affected me the most. And so I had to sit with them for a couple of days. And what I realized was when we got the news, this is what we've learned. And it's all allegedly because this is what we know right now, right? But what we know is that Jessie and her boyfriend were both found deceased inside her home. And it's suspected it was a drug overdose. It was his work. So he was a bartender. And his work went to the efforts of calling the police to do a wellness check because he's been a reliable worker and they were worried about him. So knowing this information, we don't know how many days they were in the house. We don't know how many days they were trying to reach them. I know you have to file a missing persons. There's a lot that goes into being able to get a wellness check done. And what really resonated with me was knowing that Jesse has a son and Jesse has a family, and nobody in Jesse's family was doing a wellness check. I don't know her boyfriend, but his family also didn't. This bar where he worked was more worried about him, and nobody was worried about her. Jesse retired from the business in 2017. And since then, she's done some events, some exoticas, you know, some events. But I can say there's quite a few times in the industry where I've interacted with someone and I look at them and think they're chasing death. Just straight up chasing death. If you are continuously using heavy drugs, if you are aggressively drinking, if you are mixing, if you are partying and letting yourself be reckless, whatever the whatever it is that you're doing. And so I can remember, you know, Jesse was such a fun, energetic, loving, sweet. I don't think she had a bad bone in her body. I never saw it, you know, I never saw anything negative, but she loved to party. And ultimately, that became part of her life and a part of her life that took her life. And so as I have the dust settling with my emotions and I'm much better today and able to share my thoughts with you, and then having that interaction a couple days later with a stranger, in one of those conversations that I was having the day that the news came out that Jesse Jane had passed away, one of my guy friends who's still in the industry is like, is it that tough, Lisa? Like, how come all these girls, like, what is it with the drugs? Because he doesn't do drugs. He doesn't understand. You know, why is it so much harder? I've been fine. I'm emotionally fine. I don't know why this is so hard. It's very different for men. And I said that to him. I go, it's very different for men. And you don't really understand that you don't get judged as much as we do. And so re-entering into the world once you've left the industry. And I said to him, you have not yet been tested. You have not yet tried to leave. You haven't left the bubble. When you're in the bubble, everything is great because everybody's doing the same thing as you and nobody's judging anybody, okay? When you step out of that bubble, it's every day. It's every day. And so you've got to be like, okay. And I think that that really, really affects how people move through the later parts of their life. And I wrote something down the other day, and it was to death do us part. So when you get married, they say we'll be together till death do us part, right? Well, when you do porn, your name, your porn name, your porn existence is till death do us part. Because I could be living till I'm 100 and I'm certain that when I die, the caption is going to say porn star Lisa Ann. It's not going to talk about me in any other way. With Jesse, it was porn star Jesse Jane died. That's not her real name. That's not who she is. And that's not what she was still doing for a living. She has a real name, but I get it. This is how the world knew her. And it's probably best for her privacy, but her name was then put out there in the after fact. So I said to him, you don't know what it's like. You haven't stepped out yet. And you don't know what it's like to have normal engagements with people and then have it blow up in your face 5 minutes later because they find out who you are. And they're so judgmental and so baffled by it. Even if they like you, they will turn on you. Just like the two ladies that I brought into my apartment after meeting them at dinner. And so the next thing I did the day that I got the news was, of course, I'm watching social media. I knew this was really hard on Joanna Angel because Joanna's first AVN, Jesse Jane was the host. So Joanna put out a very heartfelt video. And so I reached out to Joanna by text. Hey, I know you're out there. It's got to be harder for you. When you get back, let's do something. Let's do things. Let's think about Jesse in a positive way. And let's just sit. Let's have a dinner or something. Maybe we can just tell our best Jesse stories and be the vessel of her goodness, right? And then I'm reading a lot of other people. And what I can say is this. It is very hard to love people that are your peers and your colleagues and want to have difficult conversations with them, but not feel close enough to have those difficult conversations. There's people that I have no problem. I remember, you know, going to AA with Mary Carey. I remember helping other women and men get into rehab or discover a new way to live their life. But Jesse and I were never that close. And Jesse was closer with some people that I was definitely not close with. So there was that barrier. But those people that were close with Jesse, they watched Jesse live this life. And no one stepped in. No one helped her. No one made an effort to say, hey, maybe you should just do this on the weekends or let's do something else. I can remember being places. If you remember, there was a story about Jesse a couple of years ago, maybe 5 years ago on TMZ. Jesse was on TMZ quite a bit, whether it was being carried out of a bar, whether it was passed out on the strip in Las Vegas. And these were her friends. And they were still her friends. And these were the people that were putting out the most heartfelt messages on social media about how devastated they were. And it brings me back to one of the very first points I brought up in all of this. If everyone was so concerned and there's so much love, why was it his bar that did a wellness check? Have any of them texted her and she didn't text back? And I brought this up to a couple of my friends and said, how would you and how long would you wait? And the people in my life know that if I don't text them back in 24 hours, there's a real problem. And it was nice to hear everyone confirm that. They're like, no, there's times you're busy and it might be an hour where you're sleeping. But other than that, you've never waited 24 hours. So it really made me sit on the thoughts of an expression before I knew of chasing death. Another peer of mine would call it the dying girl. And we'd see somebody at a show and she would say, oh, that's the dying girl. And it was just so dark. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, eventually you're going to do enough drugs or you're going to drink enough. And eventually you're going to kill yourself doing this. Your body is not going to endure what you're putting it through. And you get to the point in your 20s, okay, fine. In your 30s, not so great. In your 40s, your body is struggling. And also, if you have friends that use drugs, I am not judging anyone. But in today's climate, in the US, with fentanyl, with the fact that we're losing between 200 and 250 people a day to fentanyl, and that's only what's counted. I'm certain some are just considered overdoses. I'm sure because there has to be a little bit of research and autopsy. Something has to take place to know that fentanyl was involved if it's not found on the site of somebody dying. Those days are over. You can't do those types of drugs. You cannot take those chances. People who just recreationally did something on a Friday night are dying. So please tell your people. Tell them you love them and that you want to be able to love them for the longest time possible and that you want them here enjoying this life with you and be there for them. Find out what's the missing link. What would they like to be doing other than that? Rest in peace, Jesse Jane. We will meet again. I will see your beautiful smile and your twinkling beautiful eyes. And everyone out there, make sure you hug your loved ones, check on your friends, and be a positive influence on those around you. So we have I did a date with New York City. Great day. Awesome dinner. Follow up a little bit odd, but it's also okay because it's a reminder. Sometimes I forget about how the rest of the world feels about me because I'm not in that place anymore, but I get it. And here I was just giving away a copy of my book, you know, like, here, read this, you'll find it fascinating. And then I was like, oh no, I didn't even have that oh no regulator going. And you know what? I took a chance. I don't regret it. I'm proud of myself for not overthinking it. Normally, I just shut down because I'm like, these people don't want to talk to me because they're going to find out who I am and they're going to hate me. And this time I didn't. You know what? It played out the same way, but it doesn't matter because I'm no different than I was the day before that. So that was something else. And a little rest in peace to Jesse. I got out for a game yesterday. We know who's going to be playing in the big game. It is going to be a rematch of 2020, the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. We had two amazing games yesterday, and I, at halftime of the Kansas City Chiefs-Baltimore Ravens game, judged a wing-eating contest at Memory Motel in New York City. Same location used to be the Ugly Duckling. I was there with TJ Miller, actor, comedian. And because TJ was coming, I was like, gotta bring Brett. So my co-host from Better Halves, Brett Raybould, was there in attendance as well. And so you all know, you will be getting more episodes of Better Haves on SiriusXM. I hope you're an app user because you can go back and replay the first six episodes from our six episode trial run on SiriusXM Raw Comedy Channel 99, or you can just be listening when they replay, and you can find out all the information on the social media at Better Haves SXM. Well, I mentioned AVN. XBiz just happened. AVN just happened. And my guest today, we spoke before these shows. What I didn't know was he was getting ready to take home some hardware. That's right. He won some awards. He's got a new project coming up with a YouTube channel. My guest today is Dante Cole, who you can follow on social media at Dante Cole. Another day, another chance for an incredible conversation and for you and I to meet a friend together. Today, we're going to walk through the journey of our new friend's life that was introduced to me through our mutual friend, Lainey Spicer, PR to the stars. Dante Cole is here with us today. I'm meeting him. You're meeting him. We're all going to get to know each other. I have a little backstory to share that I know about Dante already. But Dante, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to finally meet you.
It's a great way to meet new people is podcasting. And yeah, you definitely get introduced. And what's weird is once you've done a podcast with somebody, something weird will happen where your paths will cross in real life. Like you'll be somewhere and you'll be like, this is so random. I've never met you before. Now I see you all the time. But you have a great story. You answered an ad in Backpage, which was pretty popular. I want to say what, early 2000s?
Yeah, I don't know when it started becoming popular. All I remember is that they shut down at like 2014 for like the sex trafficking stuff. So yeah,
it was not good. But your experience was not great either. But you actually, how old were you and what year was it that you answered Backpage?
So I was 18 and that was 2013 was when I was searching through the jobs section and the adult section of Backpage.
And from that ad, which a lot of people don't know, there were companies years ago that placed these ads to get new talent. They mainly did it with male performers. And they did it so that they could kind of have exclusivity of them. So they would have them, you know, you're 18, they're flying you out west to California, wherever you're going. And they set you up and you have no idea what you're signing. And I have an idea, Dante, that you went through something a little bit similar because I have quite a few other guy friends in the industry that did the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. This site was Corbin Fisher, and like within gay porn, they the number one topic or like the number one thing that sells the most is straight guys doing gay porn. So they would put an ad out there, and I heard that they were kind of more sketchy back like before I was in, but they were at least honest with me. So like, hey, like you're looking for young adult males for adult films.
So back then, you answer this ad. And these yes. ads for straight men doing gay porn also offered a lot more money than straight men getting into straight porn. Am I correct?
Yeah. So the money wasn't for them in the straight scenes. It was more like that was their way to get you in the door. So like once you were in the door, then you're basically, they kind of like locked you in the house, which like, it sounds weird, but like when you're there, it's understandable because you got a bunch of fucking frat dudes who's like in college and they have no idea about like what's going on. And so if you get a bunch of frat dudes out in Vegas, they're going to cause trouble. So like they kind of locked you in the house so you weren't like, you know, causing trouble, but they so once you're there, you're in this house for, you know, a couple days, week, whatever. And then what they would do is they'd be like, hey, so you just did that straight scene, how about a couple of extra $1,000 and you could do a gay scene? And then most guys were like, no, fuck that. And, but then like, once like you've been there for a while, you're talking to all these dudes. And like, what got me was I was never like really opposed to doing a gay scene, but I just never was interested. And then one guy, I remember having a conversation. He's like, you know, what gets me hard. I was like, what? And he's like, getting $10,000 in 1 week. And I was like, you're right. So
that guy changed your life. That guy,
yeah, little did I know.
we're in a different space than even when you started your journey on this path in the industry, right? We're in a different space now. We're really seeing the world as very open-minded, very gender fluid. But and I imagine that money isn't even as good anymore because how things have balanced back out. But that was a great way to look at it, and you did it. And so how long were you in this contract for?
So the contract is kind of funny. So the So when you sign a contract, so every time you do a scene, you sign a new contract.
Okay.
And when you do that, it's a 90-day renewal. So basically, okay, all they have to do is shoot you once every 3 months, and then they have you locked in until you run up that 90-day period. And so like when I was doing it, they were basically telling you that like, this is the number one studio. You don't need to go anywhere else. This is the best it's going to get. And you, and then they wouldn't allow you to have social media. So like, you couldn't like, you know, get your name out there via your, performer.
So were you living at this house for the whole time?
Yeah. I mean, like it was a couple days at a time. So like whenever you would shoot a scene, you'd go out there for, you know, if you're shooting three scenes, then you'd probably be out there for like a week or something.
And you were at this time, you were living where, and this model house was where?
This model house was in Vegas, but okay, I was living in Chicago at this time.
Okay.
So
they'd fly you out to Vegas and then you'd fly back to Chicago and live your other life.
Yeah, pretty much. But again, like I wasn't one of the more popular models. I was like, you know, I was much scrawnier back then. And, you know, I just didn't have that it factor that sold like super well, but I did well enough for them to keep having me back. But they would do that 90-day thing to me to where I was just like, I couldn't really go anywhere else. And so eventually I was just like, fuck this, dude. Cause like I was getting people that were telling me like, you know, there's like these other porn sites out there. And like, I know people that are like getting paid a lot more. So, yeah, I eventually just ran up the 90
journey
days
of an 18-year-old male answering an ad and getting into the industry in the most roundabout way. But hey, it got you out of Chicago. They're paying for your flights. You're in this situation. It feeded you financially a chunk of money at a time. And at that time, at 18, you were also working your way to get into the Navy. Am I correct?
Yeah. So I had already enlisted in the Navy, and then the 2 months leading up to me going, I was shooting this. So I went out once in June and once in July, and then I went in and then I was blocked off. So I didn't like, I didn't do it while I didn't film while I was in the military. But yeah, like subsequently that got me kicked out of the military. So like I was doing like a special forces program and told one person, they told another person, and so on and so forth. And then the instructors were like, well, we don't want some like fag among us. So we're, but basically they're very, in detail about their medical records, like looking at medical records for you. But they only go so far. So I've had asthma my whole life. And then somehow they found out that I, had asthma, and so like just after finding out, and so they're like, oh, look at that. Like, so that was my way out basically.
In the 2 years that you were in the Navy, where did you get to go? Where were you stationed? Where were you based out of?
So pretty much the entire time I was in training, except for part of like when I was getting kicked out, because like the whole kickout process was a long time. So it was like 6 months. And so I started in Chicago because the Navy basic training is in Chicago. And then I went down to Panama City, Florida for training. And then that was like a year or so. And then after that, I went to Jacksonville to like wait out my processing out process, whatever.
Between going back and forth to Vegas to shoot, getting in the military, were these your first real experiences with traveling that much and having that independence of being out of, you know, the family area in Chicago?
I mean, I had done like a little bit of traveling, like, you know, family vacations and whatnot. But I was, as soon as I turned 17, like the day I graduated high school, I packed my shit and got out. I mean, it was just like, I was just one of the kids that like needed freedom. And so I just found an opportunity to go live somewhere else. And so I did that. And then, so I was pretty independent from the moment I graduated high school. But,
and when you say live somewhere else, Lainey let me know that there was a period of time that you really enjoyed something I think you still would enjoy doing again in your life, is living a bit off the grid in a trailer so you can come and go and be wherever you want to be whenever you get there.
Yeah, pretty much. When I was in Chicago, I was making more and more money, I was moving into smaller and smaller apartments. And because it just like felt good, because I was living in a 2-bedroom decent apartment, like in the suburbs. And I was like, yeah, this is cool, but like, I don't need this extra bedroom. And so like, I just kept downsizing. And then eventually when I was ready to move out to LA, I was like, why don't I just live in a trailer? Because that would be so fucking cool. And I wanted to live at a skydiving place, because there's a lot of people that do that when you're a skydiver. Like, you, a lot of people live on the site because it's just,
yep,
you're jumping 5 times a day. And yep, so it's nice to have your shit.
It's a lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah, and yeah, they can also move to other sites throughout the U.S. to get different hours and just take their stuff with them. So you actually kind of fell into a space where you were becoming a minimalist without really probably realizing it. Like, you just realized that you like your life better, a bit lighter, a bit more free. And now you've had to put yourself into a space where you have a lot of space because you're getting ready to start, or you've already started, a YouTube series with your best friend.
Yeah. So it was funny because I had lived in a house in between when I was in LA. I was living in Venice, and the whole time I was like, I just wanted to live back in a fucking trailer. And so eventually when I moved out to Flagstaff, I was in a trailer. But then I started realizing that I want to get out of the industry. It's become too much for me, and I just need something new in my life. And so I was like, okay, well, let's get started on this YouTube stuff. Turns out, like, I need a house for that. You know, I needed a location to shoot, a place to stay, you know, just kind of like to live with.
Real internet, all of those things. Real internet. Yeah.
You need real internet. So now I'm living in like in a nice house in Flagstaff, and you know, it's fun. Still miss the trailer, but you know, it's all good. And So
you could always go back to that life, you know. How many years total, Dante, have you been in the industry shooting?
Like, if you're counting like the break where I was, you know, in the military,
2 years, we'll take 2 years out the military. Yep.
But from like, since I started when I was 18 and I'm 29 now. So it's like 10 and a half years, give or take.
What have you learned about yourself in that 10 and a half years when it comes to connection, intimacy, and what it's like to be in love?
A lot. I've only ever been in one real relationship. Because it's just, I have a hard time like connecting emotionally with people. I love to do it, but it's just tricky. So it's very hard for me to find someone that I want to date. And it's also, I'm sure you know, it's like really difficult to date within the industry. And you have to be really a certain kind of person to handle certain stuff. And I was able to, but it just, there's a lot of complications that are added. And so I was dating someone, I know we broke up like a while ago, but like having that experience, like loving somebody and, you know, sharing that, you know, sharing that, like the feeling with somebody, it was just, it was kind of eye opening. And, you know, I really saw that there was, something more out there. And I just realized that, like, man, like if I want something real, at least for myself, not to say like, this is the case for everybody, but I need to be outside of the, industry. I need to date outside of that. And yeah, it's hard to explain, but yeah, it's
something I don't think a lot of people understand the perspective of a male performer, where there becomes this period of time, like when you get into the industry, you know, it's really fun. It's new. You get to know everybody. Then you have a little bit of a run where you're like, oh, it's even easier because I'm super comfortable with all the girls now because I've met everybody that I work with regularly. I met the directors, like that it gets comfortable and easier and fun. And then you could sometimes hit this peak where you're like, okay, where's the purpose here? Yeah. And once that purpose is not found, you know, most of us feel like when we're doing something for just a paycheck that we're no longer satisfied with what we're doing. We want to still have some excitement to jump out of bed and want to do it, right? When you don't feel that, and for a male performer to know that, like, I feel this intimacy and this connection in my real personal intimate life, and I've realized how different it is to have these cold, you know, staged interactions, which again, they run their course, you know, it's like, it's super fun until it's not. And what people don't understand is when it's not, it's not. And there's a burnout factor. There's definitely a burnout factor. And male performers have to be on set more days because female performers, we get to go out on the road and do events and dance and do all these things. So, you know, if you're going to do that 20 days a month or 15 days a month, it works a toll on you. You're around a lot of people's energy, a lot of people's vibrations, yeah. right? And they're not always super high. You know, there's no doubt in any walk of life that there's darkness. There's definitely a level of darkness in the business that sometimes can be a bit heavy, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's like, so because of porn, I like you open up your sexuality a lot. You learn a lot of what you like. You learn how to get good at doing certain things, and
you learn what you don't like. Yeah.
And it's, so it really just opens you up to know yourself better. And so like I created a relationship with sex. Like it's just like I you know, it's great. I love it. And but I learned from like what you said, having cold sex so often, that a lot of people kind of gravitate to end up wanting to do like going like crazier and crazier stuff to like get to be able to get off. But like what the direction I went was like having like meaningful sex, like kind of like not emotional sex necessarily, but like passionate, like, you know, slow.
Sure. And there are really some companies that shoot more, you know, I forget how they word it, but they do that. And there are some kid companies, yeah. but very few, but you're right.
Like Balesa. And like, I love shooting.
Yeah.
For Balesa. Like
yeah. but there's not a lot of that work, but at least it's there for yeah. you. And that's one of the things I learned about myself too, is like, you get to know yourself sexually and then you clearly know what you don't like. And you're right.
Yeah.
I did see that, especially with male performers, where every couple of years they got a little bit more aggressive. And I understood the reason why, was because they were needing to get their edge, right? And that was how they would get their edge, because they had yeah. been doing it for so long. But it wasn't enjoyable for me. So then I would be like, okay, we worked great together for 10 years, but like, I don't think we should work together anymore, because I'm just not that person. And so it became yeah. harder for me to even find work where like, I don't want to be choked. You know, I don't want to be smacked. I don't want any of that. You know, I like the old 90s where the guy takes off every single piece of my lingerie, like super slow. You know what I mean? Like, but to know that. Or
is it me, or did they like has the in, I don't know if it's because of that, like I have no idea, that's, but like, have you noticed that the industry in general has been shooting more and more rough stuff, like that's what they've been
every year
to get out of it, like just pushing the limit, kind of
every year, every single year, creating content okay. to fill in a niche or a need that hasn't been met, right? Every year. And before the internet, most of the stuff that's being shot now wasn't even legal. You couldn't even sell it in the US. You couldn't even put it in an adult bookstore. People would go to jail. So, yeah. you know, it was very soft and it was very different. And just keep pushing the envelope. And I can see now, you know, I speak to a lot of my guy friends who still enjoy porn. And they tell me, like, I like being a member to my favorite girl's OnlyFans page, because I know that everything she's putting there, she wanted to do. And right. I'm like, oh, so there's some guilt associated. Like, explain this to me. And they're like, yeah, when you see somebody just, and it's too rough, and even you as a guy are like, oh, is that girl uncomfortable? I'm like, I never knew people had this, but what they're having is exactly what you're explaining to me, Dante, where you've reached this point in manhood where you see a woman a certain way and you want to treat her a certain way, and you can't act that out anymore differently for a yeah. paycheck anymore. It's not feeding your soul.
Yeah. And it's like, on top of that, it's also just like having sex with that many people. Like, it kind of like, you know, it sounds cheesy, but it's fucking true. Like, you know, the more people you have sex with, like the more you leave yourself with other people. And it's just like slowly starts like deteriorating at you. And like everyone like works at different speeds. So I'm not saying that like porn's bad. Like people shouldn't be doing
neither it, of us are saying that.
But people, I think, should be like realistic with what they're doing. Cause like I see a lot of people talking about it, and then they're just like, yeah, it's empowering. And like, there's no problems with having sex with this many people. And it's like, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but like, you do have to be honest with yourself. Like that stuff does happen, and it happens with people at different speeds for sure. Like some much quicker than others, you know, but it's still like, that is a factor. And I feel like people don't allow themselves to realize that, because they just want to believe that porn is all good. And it's like, there's just like everything, there's goods and bads to it, you know?
I use the analogy of like the NFL a lot, because there's very few players like Matthew Stafford for the Rams, 39 years old quarterback, right? That's very few. A lot of players between 25 and 28 are like, okay, I'm good. I'm retiring. I've had too many injuries. This just isn't for me anymore. And so, you know, you have lifers in the business that there's something in them that this just works so well for them.
Yeah.
It does. And like, and I'm glad they're there. Like we need these people in every walk of life, but then there's other people that are like, okay, I think there's something else. And for you, dating is so much less complicated when you're not having sex with other people.
Yeah. But it's also just like, you just kind of get tired of the meaningless shit. You know, it's like, it's not fulfilling. Cause I could just go fucking jerk off, you know, like that's basically what it's come down to. And it's just like, yeah, there's always that like interest, like I'm going to sleep with everybody I can, but then like you take a second to think about like, I could just go jerk off, you know, and yeah. instead of like, cause sex with someone you love is just like, it's a completely different thing.
It's so you know? Different. Yeah. So that's when people ask me like, is it different on set versus at home? I'm like, yeah, at home you have 100% chosen to be with the person you're with. There's no lights on. Nobody's talking at you. Nobody's chewing in the background. Of course it's better at home, but it's definitely better when there's a connection, a friendship, a vibe, and that makes all the difference in the world. Definitely. But the experience that we both got of understanding ourselves as sexual beings is something most people will never get to really have the freedom to explore yeah. and be partnered up with such open-minded people where you could ask them anything and they'd be like, yeah, we could try that. Or yeah, I've done that. Or no, I've never done that. Let's do, you know, it's mind-blowing yeah. what we've gotten to just live through.
And just being like put in situations of stuff you would never have normally have done before. And then like realizing like, oh wow, I actually like that. That's fucking weird. You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think
yeah,
like
yeah.
a big part of it for me was also that like, I like as a guy, there's always room to grow like in certain ways, but pretty much as a guy, there's just like, there's a cap. Like you can only go so far as a guy, unless you're like Johnny Sins, you know, then there's just like a social limitless. Media aspect. Yeah. There's yeah. just, but like for me, I hit a cap, and like that's what really kind of got me like kind of like a smack in the face of like, what the fuck are you doing? Because you know,
it's smart because if you're not going to get up to that level where the rate is astronomical and you're just going to keep doing it, then you're missing out on key years where you could be building yeah. other things that you've got going on. So
yeah,
let's talk about this YouTube show that you and your friend are doing. Okay. Cause we know we all love the YouTube. Yeah. And I need to know, I'll be subscribing, of course, because YouTube is my favorite, like flip, you know, you're at the airport, you know, you don't always want to be reading ESPN or Twitter. A flip on my phone. Like, you know, you're just scrolling.
Oh, okay.
Some people say scroll. I say flip because the old news was called Flipboard. And you'd go through that like this on your phone. But what can we expect from this YouTube channel and show, Dante?
Basically, we're just kind of like creating a brand, and it's we're doing a lot of short form stuff, just like, you know, little skits and sketches, funny little things that are trending that, you know, we'll also do. But what the real core of it's going to be is kind of this show that we do weekly, and it's just for fun. We play games and mostly drinking games because we incorporate drinking into all this. And so it's just kind of like the progression of each episode is just like us getting like a little bit more tipsy and just things get a little bit more wild. But we'll do like this week we're going to do trending TikTok drinking games. And so it's like, you know, like
those different will be ones. Endless, by the way.
Right. I was doing my research yesterday. I was like, holy fuck, like which ones do I pick? But like people get like really creative with these, and so like we're just going to do those. And then last week we did we were doing wine tasting, so I had my friend a different friend go out and buy rosés, whites, reds, and sparkling wines, and then like three completely different tiers of each. So like the cheapest bottle or bag, box, whatever you could find, and then the most expensive one that was like $200, you know, of each one. And so we had to taste which one and try to figure out which one.
See if you could guess.
Yeah. Spoiler: we were very wrong on a lot of them. So we're kind of doing that kind of shit, basically. Long and short.
That's a ton of fun. You're really going to enjoy this outlet. It's a great way for you to use your social media. By the way, where can everyone find you on social media?
All my social media is at HippieGQ, HIPPIEGQ _. I got a lot of fake accounts out there. So
that's so cute. HippieGQ, because you were living in the van as a hippie and you're like a GQ model.
Yeah, it was kind of more like my little tagline or whatever. It's hippie in the streets, GQ in the sheets. So it's kind of like in my normal life, I'm just kind of like bumming it, like, you know, nothing fancy. But then when they put me on film, I'm like in a suit most of the time. And I
love it so much. It's That's fantastic. I will make sure everybody has. Yes, imposters are definitely a problem for all of us on social media.
How do you deal with like fake accounts like that? I know you're verified and everything, but like, how do you deal
with
that?
I fight them. I do a thing every Tuesday called Takedown Tuesday, where I put up the top 20 of the week, and the algorithms work best if a bunch of people report it at one time. So my followers are so lovely and amazing that every Tuesday morning while they're at work, they sit there and help me report them all. That's use a trademark attorney. Some of them I have to go the course of the law, which you have to throw money at it, which I don't love doing. But when they're really aggressive, I do. But it's consuming. I would say easily my team and I probably put between 10 and 15 hours a week into it.
Oh my God.
Because they scam people out of a ton of money. And then then they find me, by the way. Then they come to my real profile and they're like, hey, I gave you all this money because you needed money. Oh, I'm like, yeah. First of all, who did you give this money to? Oh, well, this person, Sharon, that said this was your real name and your private account. You want to talk to just me. And I'm like, okay, so you believed a non-verified account and you gave this person on the internet money and you're coming to me. Why? Because you know what? I didn't get my cut. Because right. Now let's talk about my cut, okay? Let's talk about me. Where's that money that's supposed to be for me, okay? So let me flip the script a little bit. It's a task. I like to raise awareness about it so people don't continue to get scammed. But you and I can talk about it. I'll help you with that. There's some tricks and things that I've learned. Also, making your following aware, you know, putting together a flyer that just has all of your accounts on it and putting that on Twitter once a day to remind people, or having it pinned on your Twitter, you know, to remind people to block those other accounts or report them. But Dante Cole, it was such a pleasure getting to have this conversation with you and getting to know you. At the same time as everyone else got to know you here, I know we're going to cross paths. I wish you the best of luck with your new YouTube series. And maybe I'll come on one day as a guest.
Hey, I would love that. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure. And I appreciate the opportunity.
As I'm talking about the Super Bowl and I'm talking about games, you know what we got going on? We got the fact that you could be going to games too, concerts, live events, shows, and you could be taking your friends, making memories, having an experience. You're going to do all of that and you're not going to pay any fees. Buying tickets without fees is now possible, and it's possible because of Ticket Rev. You can find out more at TicketRev.com and/or you could follow on all social media at Ticket Rev. It is the moment you've been waiting for, a moment that maybe if you're a new listener, you have a question. Well, I got an answer. You can email it to me at asklisaann@gmail.com. That is the mailbag, and that's what we're getting to right here. All right, here we go. The moment you've been waiting for. And yes, there's wild and weird emails that I'm ignoring and waiting to possibly do one whole episode where I just read all of them. I am still to this day floored that I get 100 emails a week, a minimum, of dudes asking me on dates by email. I mean, it's not even a photo. It's not even a dating app. It's just plain wild. It's wild. It's wild that people think a stranger from an email would meet them. I'm not even reading those emails. I'm going to read you some of these right here. This one's from Jonas. Jonas says, this is a message I would like to share with you after I heard your audiobook titled The Life Back. You are really a wise and smart lady because you made the right decision, and I admire you for that. You are a very strong woman that you overcome the struggles that you encountered and you became victorious. What an inspiration to me and everyone. I cannot fathom how you did it. Well, Jonas, I'll tell you how you do it. You look forward. You put in the front of you and you visualize it. And once you visualize that, now you know where you're going. And you want to go somewhere positive, beautiful, and safe. And that's what I visualized while I was going through that. There were times that were an incredible struggle. Just like here, me doing this mailbag and trying to talk over the construction that's going on in the apartment next to me. But there's nothing I could do because I got to get this done right now. So please, I'm sorry if it gets loud, I'll stop. But we're almost through this. But for you, Jonas, you got to be posed positive and focused. And if there are times where you're down, let yourself be down. Go through those stages. Journal. Put those thoughts down on paper. Because once you start your other notebook, your gratitude journal, once you start adding the things that happen every day that are magical, you'll be able to go back and look at that other journal, those notes, and realize how far you came. And then it's going to be unfathomable to you that you got there. Okay, we got another one right here. It says career. Hi, Lisa. I've followed your career from adult superstar to radio to podcast to author to fantasy football expert and finally entrepreneur with your wine business. Can I correct you, Mike, that I'm an entrepreneur all the way around? The wine did not exclamation point the entrepreneur. So I'm an entrepreneur because I've been my own boss. Though there are people that I work for, I am my own corporation. I've run my own businesses. I've had a day spa, a talent agent. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 18 years old and going out there and making my own money. The considerations of what an entrepreneur are no different. It's someone that is not working for someone else. So I had to correct you on there. The question I have to you is, what chain of events was your thought process in taking a break from your love of football and diving into comedy? As always, thank you for keeping your fans in the loop with all of your travels and adventures. Keep on rocking that life to the fullest. So I will say this, Mike. I have ventured into comedy space many times. I hosted a comedy show here in New York for 2 years. In person too, on stage, a ton of fun. I've hosted a bunch of comedians' roasts. I've traveled to comedy events in Austin, Texas, in Toronto, in Montreal. So this is not really that new. But the football thing. Earlier this 2023, so last year, it's when it's January, you're like earlier this year and you forget like, no, that was last year. So last year, I went to quite a few industry events. I went to FSGA in Vegas in February. I went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame Canton, the Fantasy Football Expo in August. I went to another FSGA. So I went to a ton of events. What I realized was in the 10 years that I've been in this space, when I got into this event, this space, there'd be like me and another woman, Stacey Stern, and sometimes Stefania Bell from ESPN. So there were very few women in the space, and there were very few people in the space. There weren't really content creators yet. There wasn't really a lot of different network companies. There was like Football Diehards, Fantasy Alarm. Like we knew of these certain companies. But as I went through this year and I went to more shows, I saw something and it spoke very loudly to me. I saw a buckle getting ready to happen in the sports space. What I saw was we're oversaturated. There's too many companies. And all of these small companies that started out of nowhere started too late to really take advantage of the sports betting boom, which was once ads were being able to be sold in states, DraftKings, FanDuel, they were paying a ton of money. So once people heard what contracts were going out with DraftKings and FanDuel, everybody decided to start a fantasy football company, a sports betting company. And every single person I talked to was like, well, you know, we're hoping to build this up big enough that, you know, FanDuel or DraftKings will buy us. And I was like, why would you think that? We already know who they are. And that boom is over. They were about 2 years too late. Then I was looking at the creators and I was looking at the space and I was looking at how excited I was that there's diversity here. There's so much happening that wasn't happening when I entered this space in 2013. And I thought about it and I thought about it. And when I was journaling in December, as I do, as I look at my year, as I look at my next year, as I kind of forward think my business, I said, you know, you've got this opportunity with SiriusXM to be back in studio. Most of these companies cannot afford studio space because there's so many of them. So everyone wants you working from home. I really just didn't want to be doing shows from home anymore. I wanted to be going into the studio for at least something. I do a lot of work from home and being around other people and getting into a studio and getting to use things that are set up and I'm not worried about construction. I'm not, all of this. So I was like, you know, you have this going on. Why don't we step away from this fantasy sports space, other than I'll still be doing things on my YouTube channel. I'll do Instagram lives. You see me doing IG lives every before big games and this and that. But I said, why don't you just step back and give this 3 to 6 months and see if what you think is going to happen is going to happen. What I predicted was going to happen was companies were going to start closing and there were going to be people out there looking for work. Many people, this is their main job. You know me, I have multiple income streams and being an entrepreneur, as you said, I've got things going. I've got passive income that comes from my past. I've got income from my books. I got income from events. I did not want to be in a space where I am competing and taking money out of somebody else's pocket. money that I don't need that they do. And so I realized when I stay, I get paid a bit more than other people because of the value that I bring on social media. I am taking up a bit more space, which is really kind of unnecessary and selfish of me. I'm not egotistical enough to really say that I should be staying in a situation where other people are going to be needing this work. And so that was my decision, and I sat on it. Sports Illustrated, first one to go. Well, we know that happened, and they let their entire staff, hundreds of people, go by email. And now those shows, Sports Illustrated, had writers that were also doing radio shows, and they were being sponsored by Sports Illustrated. So now some people lost their two streams of income. They had a writing gig and they had a radio gig, or they had a writing gig and a TV gig. They had this, now they have nothing. So now you're looking at a workforce of 300-400 people who are entering back into a space that's already oversaturated and overcrowded, and there's no money left. There's going to be no work. There's not enough to go around. So for me, Mike, to make that long story very short, it was just really forward thinking. And I've been able to do this in many walks of my life when I've surveyed businesses and when we're going to peak, when we're going to dip. And it's something that I'm always forward thinking about because I pay close attention. There's only so much money in the space. So only so many people can be making money. And I no longer wanted to be in that competition for others who do need to be making that money. And I made the right decision, even though a couple other smaller companies than SI already closed before SI. SI was the biggest. And now we're going to see what other dominoes do fall. And I think we're going to see a lot. So thank you for that, Mike. We got one more here, and it's a good one. AH says, where is your favorite place to celebrate the holidays? Well, it depends what holidays you're speaking, but if you're speaking of Christmas, there's nowhere better than New York City. It's just beautiful here. But the most important thing I think we can all agree on with this very simple question is the simple answer. It's not as much about where we spend our holidays as it is who we spend our holidays with. So think about your loved ones, friends, family, pets, whatever it is you love to do. That is your favorite place to spend the holidays. So here we go. We're wrapping it up. We made it through a little construction. No big deal. I did it. Okay, great. Events, events, events. Saturday, February 10th. I will be hosting my very first wine event at a liquor store in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Williamsburg Wine and Liquor is now carrying my wine. They've already sold out once, which is very exciting because they had to reorder. Then the following day, we'll be drinking my wine together for the Super Bowl, the Kansas City Chiefs matching up again with the San Francisco 49ers. And I will be enjoying that game at Sapphire 60 with all of my friends and hopefully you if you're in the city. And then the following Friday, February 16th, I'll be fresh off my ski trip and arriving at a teen club at midnight. It is Felt Fridays. It's 18 to get in, 21 to drink, college campus parties that I love to do at these small venues in Long Island. Ton of fun. So three events right there. You got Williamsburg Wine and Liquor. You've got Sapphire 60 for the Super Bowl and Felt Fridays. You can find them all on my social media. If you want to know all the locations that have my wine, you can also follow that Instagram, which is Lisa by Lisa Ann. We made it. We did it. We got it. I made it between the noise, which is always a little thing, and I'm super excited about that. As I reminded you in the beginning, if you're a new listener, go back and catch up on what you missed. Please rate and review as well. And thank you all for listening to an all new episode of the Lisa Ann Experience.